live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting in New York, not video streaming because we're filming today. We're going to talk about inflammation can fan the flames of depression. Rice University. Almonds are a good prebiotic, University of Florida. Dietary coca. The flavonoids in chocolate improve blood vessel function, especially if you have kidney dysfunction, University of Essen Hospital in Germany. Pine bark extract is important for all baby boomers. And this is from the Chidi Pescara University in Italy. And anxiety significantly raises the risk of dementia, University of Southern California, and more. Also today, from our environmental watch, not just the oceans and the atmosphere are heating up, but the lakes are heating up, and that's killing the world's lakes from common dreams. Now, from a man who was a whistleblower, a man who actually helped us and was a source for some New York Times articles, John Curacao from the CIA, he's written a little short piece called Now This Is Really Criminal. Congress has created an average of 50 new crimes per year for the past decade. Not laws, crimes. You'll never imagine what they can now arrest you for. Behavior that is completely normal, that represents no threat to society, and yet they've created more than 500 new crimes. Well, does that include all the state crimes? No. City crimes? No. How about the former crimes? No. In fact, today, they could arrest you for 4,889 federal crimes that didn't exist before the last 10 years. And that means that just about anything they can say is criminal. And I'll give you examples. Also, I've been suggesting to this audience that if you looked at the actual studies, if you looked at the research, if you did the scholarship, you would find that we have been insisting upon regime change around the world for over 100 years. And we have engaged in it in the Philippines with massive massacres, in Cuba, in Colombia, in Panama, but also in Italy and other places. Well, now we're going to take a look at Syria. Now, if you had listened to some programs, popular programs on Pacifica, you would have supported the ouster of Gaddafi. You would have bought into the official lie. Now, how could you buy into a lie when you have the financial resources and the intellectual capacity to do your homework? That's why I believe that these are not just errors of omission, but rather errors of commission. I believe that there are people who are knowing the truth but are not speaking it. So today you're going to find out something about the war in Syria and what I've been saying. It had nothing in the world to do with some of the citizens in Syria being angry because of conditions in Syria. It had more to do with plotting before anything happened in Syria to take down Syria and have a regime change. How do I know that? Well, on French television, France's former foreign minister, Roland Dumais, claims that Britain planned to invade Syria long before protests against Assad began in the country, and that it would do this in order to defend Israel. I'll share that information with you. And the United States was in on that and has been all along. Norman Pollack and Chris Hedges were both guests on my Progressive Commentary Hour on Tuesday evening this past week. They're both two of the finest true progressive minds, and both are not afraid to take on the establishment. And we took on the liberal community, what that has been so compromised and has gone so far astray from its original and legitimate purpose. For those of you who didn't hear it, Norman Pollack today wrote for Counterpunch an article called Failure of the American Left, Iron-Fisted Co-optation. I'm going to read it for you. I think that it's very important, if you didn't hear the program, that you hear what he has to say in this. And these are new insights. Also from Peter Dolick from Counterpunch, he just returned from the Paris Summit, and he says, business as usual at Paris Summit won't do anything to stop global warming. And, of course, we knew that. And then finally, a decade of questions over Paxil study leads to a victory, Martha Rosenberg. Now, I'll bet some people in this audience have used Vioxx, Bextra, Bakal, Trovan, Celdane, Hispinol, Darvon, and a lot more. What you may not have known is the companies knew all along that they were toxic. I'll explain why that's not good and why we've been letting the pharmaceutical industry give us deadly drugs and get away with it. At worst, they pay a small fine. That means nothing to them. Now, if time permits, we're going to hear from Dr. David Davis, a medical doctor, 35 years of experience, an emergency room doctor. He gives some insight into the multiple toxins along with an intensive vaccine schedule that ultimately contributes to the dramatic rise of autism, crib death, that sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS. And I'm doing this because now there's a pushback and the mainstream media is beginning to disseminate articles not of their own writing, not of independent research, but public relations people behind the vaccine industry to show you that the flu vaccine is safe and it is not. So we'll push back with our own. Also, I thought you'd like to hear a drug commercial that may actually work. I think you'll find it interesting. And when they come after the children from Tony Muhammad, I think you'll find this interesting. And a warning to African Americans, if you value your life, think about what's going on. If you think everything is okay, but you don't know everything is going on behind the scenes, a clip from Anonymous to let you know what's going on. Now, I can't get to everything. I'll get to as much as I can. Let's begin. I've been advocating people take organic, wherever possible, raw, non-dairy, no processed sugar, cocoa. If you hear it called chocolate, cacao, cocoa bean, it's all really the same. That's different from carob. The carob is a pod. It's a bean within a pod, and it has lots of flavonoids. But chocolate is a different plant altogether. And the flavanols are terrific. This is from the journal, Clinical Journal of American Society of Nephrology. And that means your kidneys. Quote, this is from the University of Essen Hospital in Germany. Consuming a beverage containing coca flavonoids improves blood vessel function in patients with kidney failure. Individuals, of course, with failing kidneys are at increased risk of developing heart problems, and they're more likely to die from cardiovascular causes than from any other cause. So lifestyle and dietary modifications to maintain vascular health or reduce disease risk might help protect patients' heart health. But there are currently limited diet-based therapeutic approaches within orthodox medicine to counteract cardiovascular disease in patients with kidney failure. So they did a randomized group of patients on dialysis, and they either ingested a beverage with 900 milligrams per day, that's a small amount, of coca flavonoids, or a different beverage completely, and they found a substantial difference. Quote, after 30 days, the investigators found that the cocoa flavonoid ingestion was well tolerated by patients and improved blood vessel function and reduced diastolic blood pressure. Quote, impressively, the degree of reversion of blood vessel dysfunction was comparable to the effects observed through administration of statins or making other changes. So I'd rather have chocolate to help reverse blood pressure and help my arteries than a statin. From Pescara University in Italy. Pine bark extract shows cognition for boomers. I'll quote this. This is from a group of individuals over 12 months, and it says the following. Now, you've heard me talk about pycnogenol, pyc, P-Y-C, nodge, N-O-G-N-O-L, E-N-O-L, pycnogenol. It's from the pine bark extract, and it improves attention span by, 41%. And also an improvement in memory and decision-making, 72% and 37%. Quote, as we found with previous research indicating the effectiveness of pycnogenol on improving some cognitive function aspects, the standardized antioxidant showed measurable improvements, positive effects on memory, attention, and daily task-related decision-making. End quote. That was from Dr. Gianni Belcari, lead researcher. Quote, we continue to see a significant performance of pycnogenol in reducing oxidative stress and how that factors into improving overall cognitive function. And this was published in the Peer Reviewed Journal of Neurosurgical Sciences. So the takeaway message for everyone in this audience over the age of 40, begin taking 100 milligrams a day of pycnogenol. But if you have someone in your life who has cognitive dysfunction, memory loss, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, I would give them 200 milligrams of pycnogenol twice a day and help their brain. Almonds, University of Florida, quote, eating almonds is beneficial for maintaining healthy gut microbiota composition. Now, this is from the nutrition research, but then there's another study that's important in this also, eating almonds with turmeric. And by adding turmeric, you end up with a double positive. Now, turmeric is that wonderful golden root that has been used in curry dishes for a long time. And maybe let's start from the beginning on this, because I'm sure a lot of people have not heard about turmeric. T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C, turmeric. It's a root. It has a brown skin and an orange-colored flesh. It looks like ginger root. Its flavor is slightly bitter, but delicately spicy. Now, turmeric has incredible anti-inflammatory properties due to a substance it contains called curcumin. Cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N. And turmeric powder made from the turmeric root is a bright yellow spice. It's used mainly in curries and other dishes. And it's a very important component of Ayurvedic medicine. And now curcumin is a popular supplement. So instead of taking turmeric powder, I would take curcumin oil. It is about 100 times more powerful, especially when I'm trying to help someone who has massive inflammation throughout the body and looking for what can, on a dietary level, make a difference. Black cumin seed oil mixed with flaxseed oil, mixed with coconut oil, and mixed with turmeric oil or curcumin oil. It makes all the difference in the world. You can turn off inflammation in the brain, in the eyes, so you're helping protect your eyes, you're protecting your brain, you're protecting your central nervous system, you're protecting your digestive system. So that's why we should be having this in our diet. And it's also a functional food. Now, dandelion root is also a functional food. They detoxify the liver. They help your body. And so if you combine almond milk, organic almond milk, you're getting your prebiotic and all the nutrients that are in the almond. If you want a little sweeter, use a little bit of stevia or manuka honey and put your turmeric in there. And then drink that throughout the day. That is terrific for helping reestablish a healthy gut, helping your immune system, protecting you in times of bad weather. And lastly today, I want to talk about inflammation. Now, this is a study from Rice University, published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. They examined 200 peer-reviewed studies on depression and inflammation. And here's what they came up to. Quote, chronic inflammation in the bloodstream can fan the flames of depression, much like throwing gasoline on a fire. That's according to this paper. Quote, in the health area of psychology at Rice, we're very focused on the intersection of health, behavior, psychology, and medicine. And they found that when they looked at these studies, there's two specific markers for inflammation, CRP and IL, that's interleukin 6, and it's elevated. So when you eat French fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, pizzas, colas, coffee, carbonated and sugared soft drinks, you are creating inflammation, alcohol, inflammation. And that, in turn, exacerbates depression. That's the latest on health and healing. Now for a comment about the global warming. The reality is this. Every time they have one of these meetings and tens of thousands of people attend, nothing ever gets done. And it can't get done. Yes, you'll have platitudes and you'll have people coming away saying, we have to work within the system. That's Bill McKibben. But show me any agency of government that working within it from outside, it changed. He says, you know, you're right. We don't need the C-35 plane that causes $1.5 trillion. We'd rather put that into helping children or completely eliminating all student debt. No, you can't show me an agency of government that has made any fundamental changes. All it does, all governmental agencies just grow like metastasizing cancers. We pay for it. Now, as long as you don't mind paying for it, as long as you don't care how big government gets, how corrupt they are, how much power they seek for themselves, how much they exploit us and give it to their friends, that's fine. But what happens when the day comes when you have no control over your own life? Everything in your life is controlled by those agencies. What will you say then? How'd this happen? How's this possible? Don't we have freedom? We did. But 99% of the American population, that's 99%. Here's a 99% people won't like, but I'm going to keep holding a mirror up. There is no 1%, 99%. It doesn't exist. It's the most childish, immature, stupid way of trying to say we're not responsible for everything that's going wrong in the world. It's those 1%. Well, 1% of 326 million people. Now, it doesn't work out that way. In point of fact, 167 companies, and I don't think you've heard of one of them, and the people running them and their board of directors, then you're dealing with probably around 3,000 people, control 40% of the world's wealth. We documented this in an article called The Masters of Wealth, and it's up there on the website for free in the archives. You can go and read it for yourself. It's all fully documented. These are the people who decide. Now, you're looking at one-thousandths of 1% are the ultimate policymakers. But then you have all of the millionaires and ultimate millionaires. You've got about 7 million of them. You've got those technocrats and professional class that live through the agencies and the corporations that make these decisions and live off the public. Now you're dealing with about 50 million Americans. So when you put the people who make the final decision with all the people who are implicated in carrying the tasks out or enabling the system, you're dealing with 15% of the American population. Well, 15% is a whole lot different than 1,000th of 1%. And so at least let's get it right. And then it doesn't mean that the 85% are innocent of everything. We overconsume. We over-indebt. We vote for the wrong people. We buy things we don't need. We put our money in their bank. We buy from their Walmart and Kmart. We buy their Nike shoes. We watch their programs. We read their newspapers. We attend their schools. And then we say, how did this happen? Well, why don't you take a look at the choices you make? So when these people go off to these conferences to deal with the environment, they do nothing at all because the people who control the industries that pollute make sure that they have funded all of the special panels, they have the sponsorship. Look outside the Democratic National Convention and you'll see Verizon, you'll see all these major corporations, their banners. They're paying for everything and they control everything. You think the people who are there jockeying for positions, it's irrelevant who gets elected to anything in America. It's irrelevant because behind the people who get elected are the people who got the selection process going. Remember, in America, you are selected before you're elected. And that's how it works. And if you doubt me, how did that work out for you, having the first black president? I'm just curious. How did that help? Did he stop incarcerating people of color who were smoking marijuana or had marijuana and search and seizure? Not a single one. Did he stop all of these stop and search? Not a single time. Did he put every police department on notice? If you go out profiling, harming people, especially people of color, you will go to jail. I'll have every agency of government in here and clean this crappy little police department out, close you down. Not once. Did he say what he originally said, universal health care? No. He gave you Obamacare, which was really corporate care, the insurance industry. Is it that we're not capable of understanding this, or is this an intentional neglect, an intentional ignorance where we don't want to know the truth because we could not adjust anymore to it? So the bottom line here is this. Listen to what Pete Dolek has to say about the environment and all these stupid, childish, crazy-ass environmental conferences that they shouldn't have at all because they're meaningless. But it looks nice when you're broadcasting and doing your radio show from, we're here talking, yeah, mm-hmm. And you flew over there in a jet? Oh, you flew in a private jet? I'm glad to see that you're really conscious about keeping the air clean. Quote, the bottom line of the Paris climate is this. The world's governments say they agreed to hold the global temperature increase to 1.5 degrees Celsius, but in actuality committed to nearly doubling that. A potential runaway global warming still looms in the future. So nothing positive gets done. Now, what can we do about it except for being frustrated by how corrupt people become? You can do a lot, and it's all positive. You don't need any of these idiots in Washington. They're all sociopaths, in my opinion. You don't need them to tell you how to live your life or what values you should have. You can stop eating their food, stop eating the meat. That would save us 19% of all global warming causes methane gases. You can stop buying plastic and buy paper. That stops clogging the oceans, especially the Pacific, the giant plastic vortex there, which is three times the size of Texas, killing billions of sea creatures, turtles, dolphins, anything gets in it dies. You could stop buying clothes made that are not made by a person receiving a legitimate and a living wage. Stop buying clothes from Bangladesh, from India, from China. Just look at the tag. Go online. Buy stuff from America. Union made. Stop buying stuff you don't need. Ask yourself before you buy anything, do I absolutely need this? Will my life be fundamentally changed if I don't have this? Buy local organic. Join food co-ops. Support small health food stores. Look at labels. Turn off their television. Don't read the New York Times. It's their organ of propaganda. Remember, the New York Times, more than any other media outlet in America, influenced people that we needed to go in to Iraq. Judith Miller was responsible for that. They allowed that, all of them. They're all guilty as hell at the New York Times. The Washington Post. These are publications that know the truth, but they do not align with it. stop shopping in their box stores, take your money out of their banks, stop using their credit cards. Those are some things you could do that would immediately have an impact upon their economy, which is not yours, and how the globe stops heating up. You stop eating the meat, don't eat anything with a heartbeat or a face. Go plant-based. Go organic. Don't buy GMO. Stop eating their sugar. Stop drinking their alcohol. So that's something we can do, and we don't need a bunch of buffoons running off to conferences thinking they're really doing something because they're getting media FaceTime and they're telling us about all these platitudes. Show me one signed contract that they put in treaty that they mandated must be done. Never happens. It's all voluntary. Now, this is something I thought you would find interesting. This is from Sophie McAdam from Activist Post. Quote, in this illuminating interview on French television program LCP, France's former prime minister, Roland Dumas, claims Britain planned to invade Syria long before protests against Assad began in the country, and that it would do so in order to defend Israel. In the interview, he states that during a visit to England 2 years before the hostilities began in Syria, he was asked whether he would be willing to participate in a plot to overthrow President Bashar Assad, and along with many other Arab leaders who was considered an enemy of Israel. Quote, I met with English officials, and some of them, who are my friends, admitted to me by asking my opinion that they are preparing something in Syria. He tells the anchors, who looked increasingly uncomfortable as the story progresses. England was preparing the invasion of the rebels, he goes on. The operation was prepared, conceived, and organized for the simple purpose of removing the Syrian government. It's important to know that this Syrian regime is anti-Israel. He then explains his experience of Israel's foreign policy, and so he went on. So there are other confirming reports from the United States that the neoliberal movement was all for regime change in seven countries, and they had planned this before 9/11. And Syria and Iran and Libya were right at the top, along with Iraq, Afghanistan. They intended to change regimes. So just a little input on that issue. This is from Martha Rosenberg. And here's what it says. Do you remember Vioxx, Bextra, Bakal, Trovan? Well, they were all highly promoted drugs that were withdrawn for safety risks after millions used them. Big Pharma always insisted only knows about such safety risk after a wide group of the population used the drugs and safety signals emerged. But the story of the antidepressant Paxil shows they're lying. Paxil was a top-selling SSRI, that means selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting drug, for GlaxoSmithKline during the happy pill craze that also included pills like Prozac and Zoloft. But soon after its approval, there were questions about the research published in the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, known as Study 329, and charges that the drug's true suicide risk in young adults had been buried. It was also charged that 22 doctors and researchers listed as authors on the study were not authors at all, and that the research was actually written by a medical communications company public relations person that GlaxoSmithKline hired, the company's MCC. Now, such ghostwriting is disturbingly common in establishing drug safety. Quote, you did a superb job with this, end quote, wrote the paper's first author, Brown University Martin Keller, to Sally Ladig, a ghostwriter working for MMC Scientific Therapeutics Information. Quote, it is excellent, enclosed are rather minor changes from me, In 2006, Keller formed former Brown Professor Emeritus of Psychiatry acknowledged that GlaxoSmithKline had given him tens of thousands of dollars during and after that time the study was conducted. Now, 10 years later, questions from reporters and psychiatrists and researchers and professors had not died down. In 2014, two members of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, Edmund Levin and George Stewart, asked the editor of the Academy's journal why the discredited paper has not been retracted. This year, the British Medical Journal took the step of publishing a reanalysis of Paxil that amounted to a reversal of the controversial 2001 study. It showed that Paxil indeed increases the risk of suicide in young people and adolescents. In 2015, the British Medical Journal study, quote, this is from the journal, quote, it is clear a break from scientific custom and reflects a new era in scientific publishing. Some experts said, opening the way for journals to post multiple interpretations of the same experiment, end quote. Well, so still what we have is we have bad drugs, toxic drugs, drugs that should never have been on the market, where everything about the development of the drug, the promotion of the drug, the writing of articles about the drug were all fraudulent. Here's a question for you. Shouldn't it be the law that any professor, any research scientist that participates in the promotion and sale of a drug that turns out to kill people, should that person not be held personally accountable? I believe they should. Also, this is from a man who went to jail under President Obama's Espionage Act. Hold on, is this the same president that said that he will support whistleblowers? We need the truth, we need transparency, and this is the most secret president administration in history, even going further than George Bush? Quote, Congress has created an average of 50 new crimes per year for the past decade. The media is fond of calling ours do-nothing Congress. Indeed, our national lawmakers' last term was one of the least productive in history, but maybe that's not such a bad thing. According to author John Whitehead, Congress has created an average of 50 new crimes per year for the past decade. Not 50 new laws, 50 new crimes. The trend is heading in the wrong direction. In just the 5 years from 2008 to 2013, according to the Congressional Research Service, Congress created 439 new criminal offenses. That made a grand total of 4,889 federal crimes. And that's in addition to the growing number of state and local crimes for which Americans can be prosecuted. To make matters worse, many of these federal laws lack any mens rea or guilty mind requirement. That means you can be prosecuted even without criminal intent. You say, I didn't mean to break the law. They say, tough luck. In 2013, Coast Guard agents, that's right, even the Coast Guard has federal agents now, stormed the home of a Washington reporter in search of, quote, a potato gun. What? It's a homemade device that pushes a PVC pipe to launch potatoes and other vegetables into the air. It's a kid's thing. Well, the agents did not find the potato gun or any other weapon. Instead, they seized all the reporter's notes, everything, which identified the reporter's sources, and for which they did not have a warrant. The Coast Guard claimed they discovered government documents, but they did not. They were forced to return the notes after learning the documents were legally obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. More recently, two environmental protesters went to the headquarters of Devon Energy, a large utility with ties to the Foyle Keystone Pipeline, where they unfurled a banner in the lobby. It read, The Hunger Games. The odds are never in our favor. As the banner unrolled, a tiny amount of glitter from the paint fell onto the floor in the lobby. Police arrived, determined the glitter was a, quote, potentially hazardous substance, and they charged the two with perpetrating, quote, a terrorism hoax. All right. So that's what's happening. That's what happens when a government is out of control and unaccountable, has your money to spend, and no one seems to give a damn about any of it. Until, oh, you know when you care? You know when you wake up? When your house has been broken in by a SWAT team to serve you with a bill that you hadn't paid. Or when you're stopped on the street and you're told to empty out your pockets. Or you're pulled over in a car and you're told, don't reach for the glove box to give me your driver's license or insurance. I'm going to give you a ticket, as if you didn't have a driver's license or insurance. You said, but it's right there. I just played you the tape of that. And it was done live where the officer was there. I guess then we become aware. It says more about us than it ever says about the sociopaths. Sociopaths, they're easy to see. The insecure people who have to take the hormones to get into their uniforms, to show you their muscles, and if you blink in their direction, they want to beat you to death. They're easy to see. What does it say about the American public? Oh, you know the 99.9% that never found a protest worth joining, never found an independent candidate like Ralph Nader or Jill Stein or Rocky Anderson worth voting for, never found how to join a food co-op or a women's movement or show up to protest home foreclosures? That 99.9%. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone? Let's listen now to Dr. David Davis, a medical doctor for 35 years, where he took the time to do a great deal of research about sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS, and also autism. He was pro-vaccine. He didn't believe a connection was there until he did his homework. I might mention some people from Pacifica. Do your homework on some of these issues. Whatever you decide after that is your business. But I find a lot of people talking about things they haven't done any homework but have a real strong opinion about, especially on vaccines. Listen in now.
Cats comes from an epidemic that occurred in Minamata, Japan, following World War II. Villagers in a fishing community noticed cats seen to be dancing. Started reporting it to the local newspaper. It turned out that soon infants began to have seizures. Older people began to have abnormalities of vision and hearing and numbness and tingling, which seemed to be signs of methylmercury poisoning. So the term dancing cats was derived from an epidemic that was caused by an environmental toxin at a polyvinyl chloride manufacturing site on the banks of the bay. They first affected cats before it spread to humans. And actually, dancing cats was covered up for almost 20 years. Neither the manufacturer, the Japanese Medical Association, or the doctor who worked for the company revealed to the villagers they were being poisoned by the fish they were eating. The term silent canaries is well known. Canaries were always brought into coal mines. They would stop singing if the oxygen was being replaced by potentially toxic gases such as methane or carbon monoxide. We feel that in some respects, children being brought into existence are being surrounded by a mine shaft. The mine shaft consists of toxins. And many of these babies are becoming silent. Some become silent because they don't survive the first year. They die mysteriously at age 2 to 8 months of a disease we call sudden infant death syndrome, otherwise known as crib death. Crib death may be avoidable. It seems to have arisen in parallel with the introduction of PVC into our baby mattresses. When Dr. Sanjay Gupta talks about toxic America and talks about PVC, he makes reference to the fact the incidence of autism near PVC manufacturing sites is higher than elsewhere. The incidence of liver cancer among PVC workers is higher. He doesn't mention the fact the babies are confined to PVC mattresses 18 hours a day from the day they were born. He doesn't mention the fact that car seats, playpens, strollers are invariably made from PVC. PVC is not only extraordinarily toxic in its own right, it contains antimony, a fire retardant. In many cases, arsenic is present with antimony, or it's been added as a fungicide. Phosphorus is added as a stabilizer. The net result is that a baby mattress is a cesspool of toxins. They become more accessible to a baby if the mattress becomes mildewed. There's no question, although the theory advanced by Dr. Richardson in 1989 was dispelled after 4 years of research in the UK, in order to change what Richardson was saying, we have to go back to another epidemic that occurred in 1891. That epidemic involved babies dying in a sizzle-like fashion on the floors during the winter in fashionable homes in Europe. The homes all contained a beautiful Paris green wallpaper. Paris green was used to make them vivid colors, particularly the green that was fashionable. Unfortunately, it was made from arsenic. All a chemist had to do was identify arsenic in the wallpaper, identify mildew in the wallpaper, and he had the answer to the epidemic. Arsine gas was being liberated by the action of mildew. Not surprisingly, Richardson in 1989 thought he was repeating the research done in 1891 by Gassio, the famous chemist. But instead, Richardson was finding antimony was being metabolized by mildew through a process of methylation into the gas known as stibine. Antimony is used as a fire retardant in mattresses. So not only is the PVC dangerous, but the antimony is extraordinarily dangerous. We recently had an epidemic of 10 babies dying at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, in the same housing. Three of the babies actually died in the same house. It's almost a vivid sighting, once again, of what happened in 1891. And yet no one can draw the conclusion there was anything in those houses that was similar and may have been responsible for the deaths of those 10 babies. As I was developing the whole theme around PVC, it became apparent that many of our autistic children are toxic with antimony, arsenic. And a lot of people don't know where it's coming from. Well, simply put, it's coming most likely from the baby mattress, because we contaminate the baby mattress early on. But we did something further to children. We started giving an unprecedented number of vaccines beginning on the first day of life. There is no question. If you look at vaccines, which, aside from PVC being one of the biggest mistakes of the 20th century, we added vaccines, which may be the second biggest mistake. What we did was we suddenly took a child that lay in a crib made of PVC 99.9% of the time, that possibly is already contaminated by another baby sleeping on it previously, and we're adding vaccines beginning on day one. Then we start hitting them again at 2, 4, 6, 8 months of age, the peak period of SIDS. Everyone says there's no correlation between vaccines and SIDS, but temporally there has to be. And when we look at the vaccine information statements, and as I was writing the book, I realized every parent is entitled to know the risk as well as the benefits of the vaccine they're about to be given. A brief sampling of offices revealed that most parents aren't getting any information at all about the risk, for fear they might say no. Well, there can be no informed consent if you don't know the risk. The next thing I found out, and unfortunately this was a self-realization, when I examined my own conscience as an emergency physician for 35 years, I realized that although I was technically a part of the adverse vaccine event reporting system, I realized I'd never reported a single illness as a possible adverse event. Well, since 1986, there have been 300,000 reports of adverse events ranging from sudden infant death to febrile seizures to vomiting, diarrhea, irritability, lethargy. So I started calling my colleagues, and I realized I wasn't alone. Then I realized the National Childhood Vaccine Information Act was something that was designed to protect manufacturers and hold them innocent of any dangers that may be presented with the vaccines. It also held doctors innocent of liability. But it was all dependent upon a passive surveillance system we call VAERS. And if VAERS is not reporting or not getting the reports, we may be basing our information on vaccine safety on as few as 1% of the illnesses that they're actually causing. It really gave me another reason for calling the second part of the title Silent Canaries. Babies are not being given a chance. The idea of a vaccine being given on day one in the nursery for hepatitis B intuitively makes no sense. The risk factors, unless they're there, are minuscule. The first thing I did when I was doing the book on SIDS a number of years ago was receive a call from a gentleman in New York. He said, "Dr. Davis, my baby died of SIDS, they're telling me." And I said, "Well, can you tell me anything more?" Well, I was in the pediatrician's office. I got the hepatitis B that afternoon, and 16 hours later, Lila Rose was dead. The coroner said there was evidence of brain swelling, inflammation. The final report didn't show that. And both the pediatrician, my child's pediatrician, and I knew what he'd said. So we realized that that adverse event had gone unreported.
As most do. There's more of this, and you can hear the rest of it up on our website. I saw how they were making excuses, the pro-vaccine people, that mercury's not a problem. Once again, read the scientific literature, quote, from, directly, verbatim, word for word, from the Biochemistry and Nutrition Research Laboratory, Department of Physiology, University of Calcutta, the effects of aluminum exposure on brain glutamate and GABA systems. And it says here, quote, it has been postulated that the neurotoxic effects of aluminum could be mediated through glutamate, an excitatory amino acid. The bottom line says of this, the aluminum-induced differential regional accumulation of glutamate and other alterations in enzymes, the glutamate-GABA system, may be one of the causes of aluminum-induced neurotoxicity, meaning, in lay language, that every vaccine you get that has aluminum, and that's most of the vaccines, you're putting a neurotoxin into that baby's brain. Now, not all babies will react the same, but for those who cannot tolerate that, you can end up with a spectrum from autism at one end, or Asperger's, to some form of learning disability. Secondly, this is from the Journal of Neurophysiology, Volume 80, Number 2, page 755 to 761. And it goes into selective modulation of GABA receptors by aluminum. And aluminum has been implicated in several neurodegenerative conditions, including Alzheimer's disease. And then it goes in to talk about GABA. Here's what happens. When you have aluminum in your brain, it can adversely affect the gamma butyric acid, and that is one of your important chemicals in the brain. And so this is why we see kids frequently screaming inconsolably. So we see flares in temper. They're messing with the brain chemistry, the aluminum is. Now, how many studies are there on aluminum toxicity? Thousands. I just gave you two. So when they say there's no harm to any of the ingredients in vaccines, they're incorrect. And all you have to do is just look at the science and then see. And also, as I've reported in two papers, which are posted on my website, there is no solid safety record and there's no solid efficacy record on any of the vaccines they've created. And I think we should know that. Now, I want you to hear a little piece, this short piece, from Tommy Muhammad, who says, when they come after our children, they have declared war. Listen in. I think you'll find this of interest.
Stop saying that these people are powerful, because in the sight of God, they look like ants. So I'm here today to represent a man who told me to tell you that this year we are organizing our forces, and we hope that you will join us in the largest multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-religious, multi-gender march that this world has ever seen, where we will go to Washington, D.C. with 5 million strong. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that, brother, when they come after our children, they have declared a declaration of war.
Give you a little perspective on that. The groups out there are using the latest studies, articles, and documentaries, including distributing 30,000 copies of The Silent Epidemic, which you can watch up on the website. And it's interesting because I asked Mr. Muhammad, I said, were you interested in marching to Washington before you found out that it was black children that were being used in this experiment, and then when they had a 300-plus percentage increase in autism from the vaccines, and that was hidden, all documents were collected in black garbage bags to be thrown away. That's obstruction of justice. And did this remind you of what they did to blacks with the Tuskegee experiment? And he said, that's right. He said, the community has to be aware that we have been abused throughout history, and it hasn't stopped. But this time we're going to let them know. So here's the deal. In the near future, there will be one of the largest marches in the history of Washington, and they're going to take this message, and it's going to be loud and it's going to be clear. If you say you're going to vaccinate someone, show us the proof that it's safe and effective. And if you knew that these vaccines were not safe and not effective, hence you use the American public and you use specifically children of color, then you hit it, then let the lawsuits begin. So there's not just a few people. When you think you can get away with injuring and killing anyone's baby, you step over a line, and they've stepped over it. So we're putting the CDC on notice today, and we're putting the pro-vaccine scientists on notice today, and we're putting the people within the broadcast community who are pro-vaccine on notice today. Do your homework. Prepare your arguments, because we're calling you out to debate on my program. Let the public see if you can defend that vaccines are safe and effective, because we have thousands of documents from the real science, without the PR firms writing the script for you, that will show that you have compromised one of the most important virtues in life. Trust in the truth. I'm Gary Nall. I'll let you know when the march begins on Washington. I've been asked to be one of the keynote speakers. I will be happy to do so. And I'm preparing a new documentary. And if you thought the other three documentaries were tough, wait till you see what I've already filmed. Maybe that's one of the reasons they've tried to bring down the program so many times. Have a nice day, everyone.
Stay away too long, and I can't do without you. Makes my love stronger than before. I know.